I've never really had a typical day at the office. However, this experience in the winter of 1981 had to count among the more bizarre. It was 9:30 a.m. and I was tired. I'd left Sydney on the last flight to Melbourne the night before, and after what seemed to be no sleep at all in a cheap ramshackle motel close to Essendon Airport, I had been up since Sparrowfart to catch a single-engine charter flight to Mildura. Despite my fatigue, I was pumped. Although I had recently resigned from my prison psychologist job at Parramatta Jail, I was nonetheless about to commence a career in private practice, where I'd be deeply immersed in assessing criminals, both in the community and in penal establishments throughout Australia. I'd spent the previous 3 years on a sharp and treacherous learning curve. Although in relative terms my tenure was brief, my experiential learning was deep. Beyond counselling and assessing the bottom-end effluent of the New South Wales prison population, I'd been involved with a high level of responsibility in establishing a number of nationally acclaimed prison rehabilitation programs. These included the first prison drug treatment program in Australia, as well as the Parramatta Recidivist Group, designed with considerable success to deter juvenile offenders from a future life of crime. I'd also been involved in the implementation of a prison therapeutic centre, a jail within a jail at Long Bay Prison. This had involved the recruitment and training of prison officers to work both as custodians and counsellors for serious offenders, with a view to reducing their recidivism. However, the culture of reform and rehabilitation, which had been the golden thread of my work within the New South Wales Corrective Services Department, was unravelling. There had never been votes in jails, and the popular press was baying for a return to the good old bread and water days of hard time and strict discipline. I had reached my asymptote, and it was time to move on, confident in the knowledge that my experience of jail life had well equipped me to deal with the professional life of a private practitioner. And besides, I knew that my work would inevitably lead me back into jails on a near daily basis to assess and report upon the rich diversity and dynamics of criminal behaviour. Still transitioning to make the full move to Melbourne, I was exceptionally pleased to have been briefed by Hillards, a prominent regional law firm, to undertake a full psychological assessment of their client, Mr. Smith. Equipped with all the tools of my trade, pen, notepad, and an array of psychometric tests, this was one of my first referrals and I was keen to impress. Given the urgent nature of the referral, I knew little about the case beyond a feeble assurance, "Don't worry, mate, you'll be fully briefed when you arrive. It's a break and enter matter." Young, naive and enthusiastic, I was reassured. "Plenty of time to get across it when I land," I mused. The flight was rough. Adding to my discomfort, the passenger seated behind me was breathing heavily and dripping with perspiration. He had seemed distracted when we took off, but by now, in the late stage of the flight, his symptoms were escalating along with my concern. "Are you all right, mate?" I gently inquired. Although I was still a comparative novice in the mental health arena, his psychological and physical distress was obvious. "Aviophobia, I have a fear of flying," was his urgent gasping response as he blurted his partly digested breakfast onto the cabin floor. Momentarily recovered, he continued, "We're all going to die, I know it." Quivering, red-faced and hyperventilating, his demeanour said it all. I'd encountered this type before. He was verging on a full-blown panic attack. "Breathe into the paper bag, mate. Slow, easy breaths. That's it." I wished he'd chucked up into the vomit bag, courteously provided by the charter company, instead of onto the floor, but at least now he could put it to good use. The need for intervention was pressing. A large man, cognitively unchained in a light plane, I could see the situation becoming very dangerous. The pilot, headset attuned, was focused on his instrument panel and seemingly blind to the unfolding drama. I checked my watch. There was still another 20 minutes before we landed. Aviophobia is highly debilitating. Generally silent when the sufferer is on land, its potency leaps into action and control if the person is confronted with the prospect of flying. I once had a patient who was so afflicted he could not drive by an airport, let alone bid friends and loved ones farewell, without being overcome by symptoms of anxiety and nausea. It can be mentally crippling. I marvelled at this bloke's courage in daring not only to fly, but to risk the journey in a light plane. Must be something very important to take you to Mildura like this, I opined. I was attempting to reassure him with calm, modulated tones while he clung to his bag like a stranded rat on a shrinking ship. His fear was palpable. Urgent business, meeting, no time to drive was all he could manage. Just stay calm, mate. Concentrate on your breathing. We will be landing soon. Then came the exclamation of another passenger. Who, oblivious to the unfolding pantomime, had his nose buried in a newspaper. Fuck, have a read of this, he squealed. There was a plane crash last week. You wouldn't fucking believe it. It was the same plane as ours, a Cessna. I could have murdered him. My glowering silence did little to bridle his enthusiasm as he continued. Poor bastards, they were flying back from a fishing trip in Queensland. The plane disappeared without a trace. And you won't fucking believe this, he chortled. It's gone down in the Barrington Tops. Same place as the plane crash in the 50s. Completely vanished. No survivors. Just like the Bermuda fucking Triangle.